It's time for Agriculture, presented by Turkana Farms in Germantown, New York, a small-scale producer of heritage breed livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres. They also produce a full array of garden vegetables, many of them heirloom varieties raised naturally, as well as an assortment of berries, including raspberries, blackberries, gooseberries, black, red, and white currants, mulberries, and elderberries. And now, here's Troy Spindler.
Do farm boys dream of aquatic sheep? Hey all, Troy here. Earlier this week, I dreamt that the Earth's atmosphere was collapsing. In a last-ditch response, the Dream government launched hundreds of space shuttles, claiming that the exhaust fumes would somehow stabilize the air. But something told me this was just a distraction, as the rich and powerful saved their own skins, abandoning the rest of us to a dying world. Then, as if we weren't doomed enough already, malicious aliens decided to invade. There was an overwhelming mood of hopelessness and resignation. While Victoria always reassures me that dreams don't mean anything, I still think it's pretty clear what's been on my mind lately. I can only assume that this special breed of catastrophizing anxiety is a genetic legacy of my mom's and Mark's side of the family. For as long as I can remember, my family has been plagued by morbid fantasies about the end of humanity and other possible nightmarish futures. As much as I love getting weekly updates from my mom on the insect apocalypse or our descent into a fascist Fourth Reich, it can be a bit emotionally taxing. Yet, as the walls of climate change close in around us, I've begun to reconsider the catastrophizing impulse as perhaps a part of a valuable defense mechanism, even a silver lining. This has been a particularly good week for catastrophizing about climate change. In a series of independent conversations with my friends, I've heard several climate-related woes that verge on science fiction. One friend, who does agricultural research in North Carolina, discovered she will not have a job next year because a river in Germany has been unprecedentedly dry. Another friend in Georgia is plagued by a horde of mice that has moved in with her since flooding from Hurricane Florence displaced them from their previous homes. She describes a scene from her ongoing struggle. I returned from Christmas break to mouse droppings on my bed, along with almost every other horizontal surface, the rubber tips of all my spatulas greedily nibbled upon, and a tube of cortisone cream chewed into and its contents devoured. Meanwhile, a third friend in the Pacific Northwest has been battling a formidable climate-fueled enemy of her own, wildfires. As a wildland firefighter, she has accumulated over 675 overtime hours in what has been an exhausting six-month gauntlet of hefting heavy equipment up mountainsides, digging trenches, chainsawing, and flames, too. Her efforts have been heroic in the extreme, yet the wildfires continue to grow larger and burn longer every year. Finally, in a crescendo combining both the psychotraumas of late capitalism and urgent physical danger, Victoria's brother JT described to us his experience during the 2016 wildfire that wiped out the majority of residential Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I saw the sky was orange, but I was at work, so I had to keep working. This fire, which incinerated JT and Victoria's childhood home, reportedly killed 14 Gatlinburg residents, but JT says the first responders in the area estimate it was, in actuality, over 100. A gross political erasure that evokes Trump's insistence that only 64 Puerto Ricans were killed by Hurricanes Maria and Irma. My catastrophizing brain is eating up all this personal climatological drama like a refugee mouse devours a tube of cortisone cream. While many are worried about when the government will reboot, I'm gathering my wits for the imminent alien invasion, or at the very least, for my own personal climatological drama to play out. As a new young farmer, I often wonder how climate change will impact our plot of land. However, in a classic case of the shifting baseline, I don't know much about how the land has looked all along. Luckily, Victoria and I have Mark, our farmer emeritus, as we like to call him, to help us understand what is shifting and what is not. Mark says the ground has been wetter and the air more humid lately. If this trend continues, I, of course, worry about how operations will go when our pasture becomes a swampland and I have to find my way to the barn through a perpetual suffocating fog. Will we float our chickens and sheep around on rafts, taking them to little food islands? Or will we have to replace our poor pasture animals with creatures more suited to the new environment, like ducks and alligators? The example is rather silly and extreme, but touches on a critical question we must face. At what point will our efforts turn from managing the land to battling the land? This question is why the word sustainable has never sat well with me. How can our methods be sustainable if the very environment around us is changing? Perhaps adaptable is closer to what I'm hoping to achieve. If this sounds like I'm resigning to climate change or that I plan to replace everything that Mark and Peter started, let me reassure you. Victoria and I love what Mark and Peter have created here. We will do our best to use methods that minimize greenhouse gas emissions while also building carbon in the soil. If there was any question that we would get rid of the sheep, the notion has been decidedly banished by the arrival of new precious lambs this week. Rather, I wonder if we can be more prepared for our particular brand of climate change if we let some of the land speak for itself. That is, if we manage it less intensely and mix in more foraging to supplement our harvesting. A buffer of hardy, resilient species like blackberries and pawpaws might allow us some room to preserve our favorite, yet more vulnerable ones as the slow-moving apocalypse seeps onto our farm. When you are a chronic catastrophizer, it is good to have an outlet. Holding in all that anxiety can eat you up from the inside. For my mom, I'm glad to be one of her outlets. She keeps me really well informed and forces me to think three steps ahead. Keep them coming, Mom, and happy birthday. As for me, I want my outlet to be the land. I want to channel any nervous energy into something that feels purely productive. I want to bury my anxiety and let it be eaten by fungi. Maybe then I won't have to pour it all into these bulletins.
Agriculture is underwritten by Tricana Farms, LLC, a small-scale producer of heritage-bred livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres in Germantown, New York. More information, 518-537-3815.